Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
So I got this Amazon Echo.
Oh, dude, is it magic? I hear it's magic.
Really? I'm like, this was the first time that I looked at a device and I'm like, you know, and I hate doing the second guessing, like, if Steve Jobs was alive. So this is not that, but it's like, this is the experience that I would expect from Apple.
Wow.
I am a huge Apple fanboy. And I don't use Siri nearly as much as maybe I did before because Amazon Echo is such a better, tighter experience. And, you know, just the mere fact that, like, if my phone's plugged in and I can go, hey, Siri, da-da-da-da-da, you know, and waiting for that bleep, bleep, it's annoying. If I go, Alexa, what's the weather like?
Well, and if you're far enough away from your phone, hey, Siri won't hear you.
Yeah, and I can yell at her Alexa from the other room.
Yeah.
It is so, and every night, this is the last thing before I go to bed at night is, Alexa, set my sleep timer for 10 minutes.
You just actually turned on, you turned on my Alexa.
and then, Alexa, play my audiobook.
Okay, now you're just, I'm going to start muting you because now it's going to
Alexa, stop. But that's every night. That's
Alexa, stop.
Every night, that is my ritual. That is my thing. And it's when I wake up in the morning, her alarm, really nice, gentle alarm, so easy to set the alarm. It is, and have you done the Wayne investigation?
No.
So you can enable a skill where you can do it's a mini little choose your own adventure.
That's about
the murder of Bruce Wayne's parents.
That's great. I mean, here's what I use it for all the time lately is just turning on music. We'll just shuffle. Mm-hmm. I'll just say a band and it'll just shuffle it. It's easy for me to stop it. It's easy for me to start it. I don't got to look at a menu. I just say a name. It starts playing. And then I say stop and it stops, which is just awesome and great. I use it for information all the time. Alexa, did Syracuse win today?
We assume something being said.
You probably can't hear it.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, like it's quick, it's smart. I've started doing my daily briefing. You get it. You just get a daily briefing of like the news around. It'll tell you what your commute is. You set your commute, through the app once. It's one of those things that the two elements that I've always expected Apple to kind of make more of was Siri and AirPlay, because at the point where they were there, they were kind of best in class for me. And I feel like both of those windows have kind of closed. The AirPlay to me is still the best, but like you have to have it. You have to have it on Apple TV. You got to turn on your TV. You got to switch inputs normally. Like, I look at Alexa stop it, Alexa. I look at the Echo and I'm like, this is exactly what Siri should have evolved out of your phone years ago.
Please log in. Can you do something on your phone with it?
Yeah, you can set things up with it. So I have, it'll show the list of everything that I asked for. Like the last audiobook that I played, you can enable skills. It works with if this, then that. You can set up like to control your lights and stuff and do that kind of thing. And so it gives me like a list of things. You know, I mean, I laughed and made fun of probably on one of our podcasts of the commercial when they first launched it, because it's like, well, it just looks like a dumber Siri. But they keep every week they announce the updates to it, and then when that audiobook integration for me was just pivotal. It's really it's that hands-free, and I'll be in the middle of the night, you know, eyes shut under covers, Alexa, what time is it? And she tells me, you know, I mean, it's just
that it's that micro, what, 2 second delay being gone makes all the difference.
Brian, it's absolutely, and that's one of the biggest differences between it and Siri is that when I go, hey, Siri, and you can go say, hey, Siri, and start asking her a question, but she's going to do that little beep, beep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let me think about it. Doobie doo. Hey, can we?
And you're like,
This is fascinating stuff to me. Can we retroactively make after things have already started? Is that a possibility?
So, gentlemen, I tried an experiment this week.
Mm-hmm. Was it an ethical experiment?
Maybe. I don't know if part of it was, but I assume so. As a writer working on my productivity, I'm always looking for ways to improve and produce more. That's, I guess, the goal of productivity. And I had been having conversations with my friend Peter Wax, who's a great author, and he's worked with Kevin J. Anderson. And by the way, Kevin J. Anderson, I am going to be part of a humble bundle that WordFire Press, his publishing company, is going to be putting out like in a week or so.
Oh, that's great.
We're doing a humble bundle with a bunch of fantastic authors. It's going to be a super great deal. You'll get a ton of books in there. And even if you have, like, I put the Chronological Man in there because it'll be a lot of people who never read it. But forget my stuff. There'll be great stuff in there. But I'll pimp that out a little bit more. But anyhow, Kevin J. Anderson is an extremely prolific author. If you look at his bibliography, this is a guy that wrote a bunch of Star Wars novels. He's written X-Files novels. He's written all the, with Brian Herbert, the Dune novels that came after Frank Herbert. And his own franchises and stuff that he's created. This guy's written hundreds of books.
Is he the one that that does a lot of voice dictation? There was one of these prolific guys who just goes for walks and tells stories.
He hikes. The guy hikes when he does. So he's known as the hiking author. So he wanted to climb all the tallest mountains in Colorado when he moved there. And he brings along a tape recorder or a tape, you know, the recorder. I guess it's not tape. It's a recorder, digital recorder. And will narrate as he does this. And this was a fascinating idea to me. I can comfortably create 1,600 words an hour. And there's a difference between a typing speed and a creating speed. Typing speed is just not having to invent names and things that's going on versus creating. 1,600 words an hour is about how much I feel comfortable. And I was interviewing Peter on one. I do a lot of interviews now on my Facebook page, facebook.com/AndrewMain. And Peter mentioned to me that he had been learning how to do this and that Kevin may, you know, Peter was saying that like the upper limit is around 9 or 10,000 words an hour. He says that's the speed. If you listen to it, and he made this great analogy. He said if you listen to an Audible book and the narration there, a good narrator does about 9,000 words an hour. And if you have enough of your stuff pre-planned, you could, you know, maybe come close, but you don't have to because you click the pause button. And that was the big thing that Peter taught me was it's not like you just hit record, sit back, and start telling the story. You click record and said they walked into a dark room. Pause.
And then you take a moment to think like, well, okay, was it hot? Is it sweaty? Is it, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then you figure out the right way to phrase it.
Yeah, and if you have a lot of it in your head and if you're doing dialogue, you can do a ton of it at once. And Peter and I came up with sort of a training program for me to try doing it because I had problems before trying to do that. I did not want to do Dragon Naturally Speaking. I have and people are like, oh, I use that. The only people I know that works really well for are people who have problems typing because it's extremely slow because you have to say, period. You know, he walked in the room, period. Quote, who are you, comma, quote, he asked, period.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I have friends who have dyslexia or friends who have carpal tunnel syndrome who use it, and it works wonderfully for them. But people I know who are skilled typists, I don't know anybody who feels that that's a good medium to do. So what I did is I would dictate into my little digital recorder, and then I used a service that I paid to do transcription. And I found rev.com, R-E-V.com, for $1 a minute would transcribe it, which is a little bit pricey, but it is and it isn't. If you wanted to do an 80,000-word novel, depending on how long it was, I gave it a shot after going through some practicing some different, you know, ways to get into it from Peter's suggestion. And then my goal was, you know, if I hit like 2,000 words an hour or whatever, I'd be above my typing speed and that would be worthwhile and I could walk while I did this. I was hitting like 5,000 words an hour my first time out.
Wow. And you felt like the content was as good as it would be with you typing it?
I think so. You know, I sent a sample to Justin to take a look at when he gets a chance, because I actually, in that test, actually, if you total, like the total amount that I spent would have been like about eight or 9,000 words an hour. And now what I'm doing is I'm saying, okay, I don't have to fill, if I'm out for an hour walk, I don't have to have an hour of dictation. If I get 20 minutes, that's fine, because that was an hour I was going to spend walking, and it's just a bonus that I got that. But, you know, I'm writing a book now that the chapters are about 2,000, 2,500 words long. I go out for an hour walk. I get 20 minutes there. I write a chapter in that walk.
So what you sent me today, I took a look at, but I have not read. Is that what you got back from Rev.com?
I went in and I then read. What they'll do is when they understand that it's somebody speaking, they'll put it as quotes. They put the commas, the periods. They do the grammar. They don't put it into paragraph form, and paragraph form is subjective anyways. There's not a – so I went through there and I put that into my finished paragraph form in that, and I was just curious, you know, to get – have an outside reader do it, because that is extremely dialogue heavy. There's not a lot of action stuff taking place. The point is that it's been a very interesting experiment, and when I did that write-up, I have a write-up where I talk about it on my blog at andrewmain.tumblr.com. I explained my first experiment, and then I had a problem about 3 days ago. I said, okay, I was doing some test stuff about a sci-fi novel, and I said, all right, I've got a book that I have a really strong character I'm very interested in doing that I really want to finish this book. Let me try it with that. And I walked outside with my tape recorder, and I started to try to get going, and I couldn't. I was like, man, like I can't get this started. You know, what's the problem? And I talked to Peter about that, and he's like, well, you probably don't know how the character's voice. You don't know the point of view yet, and I think anytime you reach a hesitation or writer's block, it's because there are questions you don't realize you don't have answers to, and that was very much on the money. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to write this book, and the next book, I'll dictate. Well, I got about 4,000 words in, 5,000 words into this book, and I said, you know what? I need to go for a walk. I'm like, I'll bring the tape recorder, and in about 2 or 3 hours, I had spoken just as much as I'd already written earlier in the day.
Well, I would imagine, you know, beginning things is the hard part, right? Where you only have an amorphous idea, and once you get the base, and once you see a direction, it becomes increasingly obvious, you know, now we just fill in X, Y, and Z. And it's almost as though it's, I would imagine that the storytelling elements, when you have A and C, and all you got to do is figure out what B wants to be, that's a much, much shorter decision process creatively than beginning like, well, I know we'll start with A, but then where do I go?
Yeah, it, Brian, it's absolutely on the point, and that you need to... You often we forget how many things we have prepared already mentally in the toolbox that we're just pulling out that feels spontaneous and in the moment. It's like music, you know, you have to know chords, you have to know these other things before you sit down and you start composing. When it comes to a story, you need to have you shouldn't be making up the every detail about the character as you're writing. You should have a clear idea of who they are and all that. And you may think conceptually you have a good idea, but it's like a dream where it's more of an abstract understanding. And then once you try to sit down and do this, you're like, oh, yeah, I have no idea what kind of clothes he wears. I have no idea what's in his pockets. And does he have his own car or whatever? And when you start stumbling that, but once you start getting into it, and that was the case for me last night, is, you know, I went, you know, I recorded 40 minutes and uploaded it to Rev.com around 1 a.m. I woke up this morning and they had a finished transcription for me.
That's amazing. So it's that fast. Like it's mm-hmm. It's within hours. That's not even like a day turnaround.
Yeah, I would love to find a cheaper way to do this, because it's like, you know, paying $60 for an hour of, you know, transcription. And I've had a few people volunteer. I've had people volunteer. I'm like, oh, here, try this. Still waiting to get it back. So there's a reason why you pay.
Yeah, no, I mean, because that's the thing is what you're really buying is you're buying timeliness and accountability for the deadlines and a guarantee of a certain level of quality, to where you're able to come back and say, like, hey, man, I'm paying you $60 an hour. You know, you can't catch this flub or whatever.
Yeah, I thought Rev.com did a real – again, I had to go in and tweak it, but not like, you know, I would love for Dragon Dictate to work. There's supposed to be like an auto grammar function in there, but I've never been able to test it, and I have not found a single review online of anybody using it. I mean, my dream would be like, yeah, I just go record this, plug it into my computer, and come back, and I have a good enough rough draft, not an unpunctuated rough draft that would just give me a headache.
Right. I think that's the rough part about it, and that's why, you know, they're able to charge $1 a minute, right? Is there's just that element that, you know, we can't replicate mechanically yet. Although, what if you got really cute and just, like, you know, sped up your voice and then just sent them?
Well, you mentioned that, but actually I was trying to remember if there was a podcast filter that cut out. I remember the name of something, I couldn't find it, a podcast filter that cut out spaces. You know, I think
cutting out spaces, I don't remember. I know that there was one that would kill noise.
Audacity has a filter that you can configure to remove silences, but
yeah, I was looking up the Audacity manual on that, and I was trying to find out, like, man, is there? I would love just to drag and drop this file in there, and I was trying to remember if there was something, but maybe it was just something that just adjusted everybody's levels. And I know that some people are pointing out that some of the podcast players can remove silences while you play, but I'm not aware of, you know, I would love just a drag and drop piece of software that I could put something in, because I could probably shave, you know, 15, 20% off, but, you know, I can't think of something that would go in and do that, which I don't need to get that cheap, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that extra $15, $20, like, you know, just good on you, Rev.com.
Yeah, because, like, you figure if you do a book that's 80,000 words, and if you were doing, you know, if you were hitting your high, if you're hitting like a high point of, let's say, 8,000 words an hour, you're going to pay $600 to have somebody transcribe it, which in the scheme of things for me is not a lot of money to pay. You know, I mean, not that I'm money bags here throwing around 600 bills like left and right, but like I will end up making more money than that when I release a book. Especially if you guys go onto Amazon.com and buy a Station Breaker.
Oh, snap! 5 stars.
So I'm guessing that's your pick for this week is Rev?
It's a good idea. Brian, I will pick Rev.com. And one of the things they do, too, is every time you get a review back, you get your transcription back, they're very eager to, like, hey, if you give this 3 stars or less, this person won't do another one of your manuscripts. Also, they have, this is kind of cool, and this is a way to think about this too, as if you're in a time crunch and you got to get something done, and there's a couple stories of, like, I think Dostoevsky had to, like, write a book in a hurry, and he hired a woman to transcribe it for him, and he ended up marrying her. Milton, Paradise Lost, wrote this when he was blind, having his daughters transcribe him. So Rev has a iPhone app, which is a recorder, right? So you can go in there and you can record something, blah, 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 and then upload it and within the app, order your transcription and everything.
Wow.
Wow.
I don't use that. I use a recorder with a little lapel mic thing because I like to be able to start and stop and do that very easily, but it's an option.
Yeah, that's damn rad.
Brian, do you have a pick?
Not really. I guess just to touch on, I mentioned Zootopia in there, but it's really an exquisite testament to their storytelling prowess. There is not an ounce of fat on that thing from beginning to end. And they also do a fantastic job of, you know, when you get that aha moment of a good surprise or a good callback, and you can very kludgily set up, you know, Chekhov's gun in the first act, and then the good thing that gun was there that they went out of their way to tell me about early on. But when Disney does really well at their scripts, it serves another purpose, to where and specifically in Zootopia, there's this whole, like, training period that she goes through, and the story they're telling at that moment is this little recruit is failing a lot and has a lot of gumptions. It's this whole officer and a gentleman moment. But the real purpose of it was to essentially highlight all of the dangers that she's going to encounter on the job, and you have all these parallel moments, and you realize, like, oh, I understand the consequences of being dangled over that ice and how it would kill a bunny, because we definitely saw, you know, the officer shouting that she'd be dead. It was just great, and just so visually rich. Just great, great storytelling all around.
I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, man. Disney Animation post Pixar just killing it. My pick.
I have one more pick.
Okay, go ahead.
You know, if you're looking for a really good head-to-head battle against two titanic superheroes and that delightfully turns into an ensemble piece, I'm so excited about Civil War, I can't contain myself.
All right, so everybody, 2 p.m. Pacific time, 5 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow, me and Scott Johnson are going to do a big Batman Superman Hotline Monday. People can call in. I've been saving my Batman Superman hot takery for that. But man, am I excited for Civil War. Man, Civil War is going to be great. So good.
If we could combine the cinematography of Batman versus Superman with Civil War.
Tomorrow.
Well, I know, because like listen, I mean, like, Larry's a friend. Larry Fong's a cinematographer on Batman vs. Superman. He's worked with Snyder and J.J. Abrams a lot.
And me.
And you a lot.
Shot one thing for me.
His visual style, I feel like, is one of those things that when we look back at our age of cinema now, will be something that we identify very much of its age, and that, and to his credit, he has pioneered that. But that movie,
tune in tomorrow, folks.
You'll never guess. Did he like it? I can't tell.
Oh, no. It's not that. Listen, I didn't like it. And I've said I didn't like it, right? But it's just like this right now, this is not me wanting to like save it for Hotline Monday. This is just me not wanting to crap on any element that, like, I mean, because it's not Larry's fault. Like, the movie looks gorgeous. Like, it looks really, really cool. It's just, you know, how many times it's like, oh, man, finally, we have our greatest iconic clash of ideologies in this corner. The grim, gray, slightly unhinged world of a gritty Gotham and its great and terrible Batman. And in this corner, the gritty, gray world of Metropolis and its dour hero, Superman. Now let's see who can pout the hardest as God cries fat tears upon such a melancholy battle.
You're kind of making it sound watchable.
Sold. You know, I have a quick fix. Is instead of them putting more dream sequences in there, they should have had the Justin narration.
Oh, yeah, dude, I'd buy that for a dollar.
So they spoil this in the trailer, right? Wonder Woman's there. Doomsday comes out, right? They fight Doomsday. Here's my thing. They're going to do, from here, a Justice League movie. Who's watching that fight and is like, oh, yeah, this is cool, but just wait until Aquaman gets in. It's going to really be something awesome. You know, these are your three biggest heroes.
Hey, guys, can we bring this battle close to the waterfront? Hint, hint, you know? Because a seahorse could really effing tip this in our favor.
It's like, oh, man, I'm sure when Cyborg gets in the mix, this is really going to light a flame. The movie looks good. It's not a good movie. Whatever. Okay, here's my pick. Documentary Now. It's on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. The IFC, Fred Armiston joint.
Fred Armiston, Bill Hader, and Seth Meyers are the creative forces behind it. I just watched their two-part finale, The Blue Jean Committee. So if you're not familiar with the premise of the show, each episode is its own self-contained parody of a style of documentary. The Blue Jean Committee, I think it's like Gentle and Soft, the story of The Blue Jean Committee, is their rockumentary parody about a soft rock band from the 70s. And it's a two-parter. It's like each episode is like 20 minutes. But it's such a great, you know, because there's been a couple fake. I mean, like, if it's not Christopher Guest, mockumentaries are kind of hit and miss, you know, because Christopher Guest kind of knocked it out of the park and realizing, like, hey, no, you have to, like, just have amazing improv actors that will make this seem real and awkward and awesome and have chemistry, and it's super fun. But, you know, there's been other ones that have come out recently that are like, once you kind of get past the idea that, okay, it's a fake documentary, and now, you know, no one's going to be able to say two lines without them trying to make a joke, as opposed to funny elements of documentaries where, you know, people are just awkward and weird, and that's what's funny about it. This documentary now is very committed to playing it straight where it needs to be straight and letting kind of the absurd elements sort of come out organically, which I think is really, really awesome. So go ahead and watch it. I liked it.
You saw What We Do in Shadows, right?
No.
Oh, Justin.
You could be disappointed in me too, boss. I ain't seen it. Oh, I ain't never even heard of it.
Good. So let me explain to you. What We Do in Shadows, why I love that is that it starts off with what you think is kind of a one-joke premise. Let's do a mockumentary about a group of vampires. And it absolutely hits it in the right way where at first you get the jokes and then you get invested in them. And then you care about the characters. And they did so many things right. And I'm excited about Takela, the director of this. He's going to be doing the next Thor movie, I think, you know.
Wow.
I can never pronounce his name, but yeah, you know, they talk about, click on Taika Waititi.
Taika Waititi, yeah. And Jermaine shows Clement.
Click down to his next, what he's doing next as a director. So he's doing Thor Ragnarok, right? And you watch this, you watch What We Do in Shadows, and you realize that it takes these sort of almost cartoonish characters and it gets the jokes, and then you're invested in them, and then it still continues to be funny, but in whole new levels, and they evolve over time. They have character arcs within the structure of this, you know, and it was such a well done one, and such an example of what makes how to do really good storytelling. And also, it wasn't like, oh, we'll just do one vampire, we'll do several, so each one has a good 15-minute story or 20-minute story in there, and then we can tell them together and give you a full, you know, as a storyteller, I go, oh, man, this is great. This is how you take somebody as a kind of an interesting arc, but not a huge two-hour arc, and you combine it with these other people and their relationship, and it's worked great. And, yeah, he's doing a sequel because there's werewolves in there, and, you know, they're kind of like bros running around, and it's pretty funny. And it's going to be called Werewolves, Werewolves. So... We're wolves.
Oh, awesome. Maybe I'll watch it tonight.
Yeah, please. I think you'll be glad you did. It'll change the way you think about that genre.
Sweet.
Gentlemen, it's been after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.